The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 617, recorded on July 21st, 2021.
The 617th edition of the TV Gaming Podcast, the 450th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dunzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So yeah, we skipped last week because there was too much in real life going on and there wasn't enough in the video game industry going on. I also discovered, to my dismay, that the last two podcasts did not upload correctly, so I had to re-upload them. So they're live now. Sorry about that, folks. It happens.
Well, I'm glad they're up now. That's good.
Anyways, what have you been playing, Scott?
Trials in Cold Steel 2. There's a civil war breaking out in Erebonia, and after the cliffhanger from the previous game, you're going around getting back your fellow student comrades or classmates, and you're going to decide which side to take in the civil war. It's really interesting to see the different perspective views between what happens in Crossbell, which happens at the same time as the first two Cold Steel games. So you get a different point of view on the events. And it's really interesting, I think.
Have you been playing East 9 Monstrum Nox yet?
No, I haven't got that game yet.
Okay, where are you on that series?
On the East? Oh, okay. Memories of Calcetta.
Which
I think it's the fourth game, I believe.
Okay, so you're a ways away from number 9.
Yeah.
Okay. Just wondering, because it was released recently.
Yeah, I know I'm working my way through Cold Steel. Then I know they're
working your way through every JRPG ever made.
Well, the really good ones, I guess, at least. They are going to release officially the Crossbell games on Steam, and then Reverie.
Are you
going to
play Chris Tales?
I think so. It looks interesting.
It's on Game Pass right now, but
right.
We'll discuss that later.
Okay.
TJ, what have you been playing besides a certain fighting game?
mostly that certain fighting game, but I'm trying to think. I finished Resident Evil Village again with Sam this time, so still good, still fun. That third part goes a little batshit and is ridiculous, and even Sam thought so, but still a decent ending on it. They kind of pull it back together at the end. I think I just really hate everything with Heisenberg. He's the character is okay, but his location and the boss fight are just but it's once you get past that, the story pulls itself back together and ends properly, so like I can't complain too much. It's like a tenth out of a game that I otherwise really like.
I, on the other hand, have not been playing anything new. I've been going back into certain games. I've tried to enjoy Biomutant. I just can't. I really tried because it wants me to like it, but I can't like it. Which is a shame, but, you know, that's the way things are. Have either of you played Biomutant yet?
No, not yet.
How about you, TJ?
I have not.
Wait until it's $5, then you can figure out what... It has that stink of a game that's going to be $5 to $10 in a few months anyway. You know, like that, the Grin version of Bionic Commando. that you see tons and tons of copies, unsold copies in store shelves still. We're going to move straight on to game news. This particular news has really captured a lot of people's attention. Some Steam Deck pre-orders won't ship until September 2022, and this comes from BGR. Last week, Valve announced the Steam Deck Portable PC and revealed that pre-orders would start on Friday. Valve did not reveal the Steam Deck's actual release date. It did reveal that the console would be available in December for those who pre-order. The Steam Deck pre-order involves paying $5 up front, which will be put towards the purchase of the chosen model. It turns out that a significant number of buyers pre-ordered the Switch LED alternative. The Steam Deck quickly sold out, with ship dates slipping all the way to summer 2022. Valve attempted to prevent scalpers from hoarding the initial Steam Deck supply and set a specific rule for pre-orders. Only Steam account holders who made at least one purchase before June 2021 could order the Steam Deck initially. For 48 hours starting last Friday, people with brand new Steam accounts were locked out from the ordering process. Even so, Valve's servers crumbled under the load. Steam Deck registration opened in North America and Europe, and many people found themselves unable to pre-order the console. Valve sells three Steam Deck versions, the cheapest one starting at $400. That's slightly more expensive than the new Switch OLED, which is $350, and comes with 64 gigabytes of onboard storage. The 256 gigabyte and the 512 gigabyte models feature NVMe storage and sell for $530 and $650 respectively. For those who don't know, NVMe are SSD sticks, which are basically the fastest available right now. The company did not disclose pre-order figures either, as ship dates started slipping. But an issue on the site's code allowed for people to find the actual pre-order figures. In the first 90 minutes, Valve sold over 110,000 Steam Deck units with NVMe storage. Most of the sales came from North America, according to what people could find in the online before Valve patched the problem. In other words, they patched the leak. So yeah, it's pricey.
Yeah, I know TJ and I also got the $5 pre-order little thing, and I went with the 520 gigabyte model for this Steam Deck, or the Gabe Gear, as some people are calling it. But you know, I'm very excited about this because of the ability to download any or install any operating system or third-party software that I so choose, because apparently this is a Linux-based operating system, so it's very open to, you know, putting on whatever you want. And that's really unique, I think, with these type of things, because usually you're used to Sony and Nintendo, and I think even Xbox, it's kind of locked in. What you get is what you get. You can't really mod it without, you know, voiding the warranty at the very least.
That's not quite true, the Xbox. What the Xbox allows you to do is it allows you to purchase a licensing fee, and basically you can do whatever you want, you just can't go on live, and you can't play regular games.
Right.
And you can switch it back, though. It's a sort of this or that situation in which either you have your Xbox for doing game brew, or you have your Xbox to play games that you can buy on the shelves. One or the other, but not both at the same time.
Right. And then with the Steam Deck, you can do both. And so I can put on, you know, GOG Galaxy or Epic Game Store or, you know, various emulators of different other consoles.
I remember when Sony did this with the PS3 and that did not work out well.
I don't know. Yeah. it was very unfortunate, but I guess I'll be able to play Suikoden 5 on this Steam Deck with an emulator.
Yeah. I wonder if you can swap out the store. I doubt it, but it'd be interesting if you could.
The storage is built in. What you can do is it has a port for a micro SD card, so you can expand the storage even further.
Yeah, not quite as good as having an NVMe.
Right, but you'll be able to like save your games and keep them on like
right.
keep
yeah,
them on
the thing. 512 gigabytes. It's basically enough for gaming. I mean, on a PC. I've never really had to... It's funny. Well, I delete games when I no longer play them. So, but the games that I have are roughly around 1 terabyte. And I think the games that you're going to be playing on a Steam Deck It's not going to be something like Civilization. It's going to be more action-oriented stuff.
Well, I'll probably be playing stuff like Ori, maybe Charles in the Sky. Yeah, I got a bunch of different games that aren't as demanding that I can play on there very easily. Like Hades would probably play just fine on there.
Ooh, I just realized. Imagine if you could game stream on it, in which you can. Yeah, I'm going to get the Game Pass app and stream games as well on it. Because remember, Microsoft has debuted streaming from a browser now, which is how they're able to have Game Pass on iOS devices. Just play it through Safari.
I know people were having trouble doing the pre-order, but when I went and did it, it just went right through it. It was no issue, so I don't know why some people are having issues and others not.
You know, it's pretty clever way to foil scalpers. One thing, they don't like paying anything up front. And for another thing, you just can't create a Steam account and expect to pre-order one immediately.
Right.
Yeah. I still think this is cool just because, like, well, like, I know that Nintendo Switch is good for an indie machine as well, but the thing that appeals to me about Steam Deck, for me who plays indies literally all the time and looks for new indies all the time.
Here he goes. He's going to start playing The Binding of Isaac on a Steam Deck.
It's that
girls.
It's that plenty fine.
It's that Steam Deck, or it's that Steam curates their store better.
You've got to be kidding me.
They curate better than Nintendo.
You've got to be kidding me.
I'm not. Have you seen
how
the
many
two?
Thousands
Have
you put of them crap
side by side?
Asset flip games do you go when you look at upcoming games on Steam or try? It's almost impossible to find games on Steam. Please don't tell me that Steam curates
you are
their games.
Yes, they do. They curated it.
I'm on Steam right now, and they have so much garbage front loaded. It's not even funny. That's
so
what they have
Nintendo,
to do. That's...
But you know what Steam does that Nintendo doesn't?
Nintendo. I don't care what they do.
Well, you should, because that's the point that I'm making.
Uh-huh.
Is that Steam is full of shovelware too, but Nintendo is full of shovelware. But you know what Steam does that Nintendo doesn't? They sort it into categories like new and trending and popular and things that sift the crap.
It's not curation though. That's just an algorithm.
But it's an algorithm
curation,
that helps.
Okay, here's the thing. Curation means you have a human person going through stuff and picking which ones to promote.
It doesn't
and they do
matter.
Have,
it's better
they,
organized.
Steam does
and it
have
helps
people
sift out the garbage.
Yeah, I know.
Is what
but
I'm
Steam
trying
does
to say.
Have curators who, you know, you can subscribe to a curator and they can tell you what they think of games. But
Nintendo
it's only the games
doesn't, and that's why. And that's why you can go to like where you can either look up Nintendo first party games or you can look up everything, which includes a lot of shovelware and no way to just get rid of that. There's really no organization outside of first party Nintendo games and all the other stuff on Nintendo Switch, which is what makes trying to find new cool games on a hassle. Cause I don't know, cause I like have to actually go to the page of a game and see, oh, this is a fucking crap game. I don't want to play it. And I have to do that like over and over and over again, or at least with Steam. I can just go to the popular and new, or I can go to the top seller list and I can see, these are the things that other people are saying are good.
The games have tags on them, like, you know, what type of game it is, and you can say
yes,
on
I know.
Steam,
I
want
Steam too, you know.
And you can use the filters. Well, I'm saying
I was one of the first users of Steam, damn it.
Okay.
But you're not a user of Nintendo Switch, and so you don't know that there is none of that organization there.
Yeah.
Right. There's no filtering. There's no tags. There's no, you know, getting recommendations from, you know, other friends or anything like, oh, you played this game before. This game is like that game, you know, and so you don't have that on the Nintendo Switch.
So speaking of which, we should mention that the Switch LED has been getting torn apart by people. It is taking a drubbing from people.
I don't know. Well,
there's been a big backlash against the Switch OLED console.
I've seen a meme where I guess there's a Switch emulator and they showed it on the Steam Deck saying, there, now you have a Switch Pro.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think there's any
before
reason
the Steam Deck was announced. It was getting torn.
I don't think there's any really reason to hate the OLED just because, like, who cares? Like,
and that's just it. Who cares? That's been the everybody's reaction to Steam Switch OLED. Who cares?
I've seen some other surprising features for the Steam Deck. Apparently, it has gyroscopic motion where you can tilt the Steam Deck to get certain angles
motion. Any cell phone?
Well, or the 3DS I think used to have it.
The Switch doesn't?
I don't think it does. The controllers do.
It has motion controls on the controllers, but that's
the controllers.
Right? That's infrared motion detection. Right.
That's not the same thing.
Right.
No.
I mean, here's the thing. I'm not going to get a Steam Deck because I already have a cell phone and I can just play Game Pass games on it. And that's fine. You know, I have no need to play, say, Civ 6 on my cell phone.
The other thing is that for indie games, there's a lot of indie games that come to Steam first before Nintendo is usually like either the simultaneous or second destination for a lot of indie games, but a lot of people still prioritize Steam.
But I will say this. I mean, I noticed that Scott went straight to the 512 gigabyte model, huh? It's like, what?
It has a nice glass screen, comes with a case.
I'm just commenting on the Switch's storage issues.
Oh, yeah.
This is the difference between people who know software towards Nintendo, who only knows about hardware, and also online functionality.
Yeah. I mean, there's also the fact that the Steam Deck has a USB-C port. It can be plugged into TVs. It can be plugged into various docks.
There will be a dock sold.
I'm wondering about battery life on the – have they mentioned that yet?
They've said 7 to 8 hours.
Okay, so 4 hours. That's generous. Whenever you hear the official numbers, just slash it in half.
It probably depends on what you're playing.
Slash it in half because they're gonna give numbers for if you play some games that minimally drain the battery. If people are gonna play Black Mesa on the Steam Deck, it's gonna drain. But I'm gonna interpret that to mean 4 hours, which is pretty damn good for something with that kind of power.
I mean, you play Stardew Valley, you'll probably get about 6 or 7 hours out of it.
Speaking of which, did you see where Eric Barone revealed that there's some functions that people, after all these years, almost no one knows about?
Yeah, there's the tree symbol will glow when you go over an item that goes to the convention center, or the community center, rather. And I guess a lot of people didn't know about it or didn't realize what
it
meant.
Didn't use that function. Yeah.
Right. I read that story. That was very interesting. It's always interesting to find stuff like that, you know, that people didn't realize or little tips.
So which model did you get, TJ, the 512 too?
Yeah, I went for the high-end one. Yeah. So I don't want to deal. Like, I like the idea of having the better version of the – I know how what the difference between, like, SSD and NVM, the M2 SSDs. Yeah. And it is substantial. So
I mean, like I said before, NVMe's are the cutting edge of SSDs right now. And they're also inexpensive. So if you're gonna make a portable, you might as well make it with NVMe.
Yeah. And I think it's like one of the coolest things about the Steam Deck is like Steam has to be eating the cost on that. There's no way that the gear that they've put in that is actually at the price that it's selling, because like everything that we've seen in the terms of handheld PC stuff in the past has been like at least over $800, usually over $1,000. So to be able to put a machine together that can start at $399 is decent. And even if that's not the best model, even to be able to cut it down to $650 for the high end one is pretty dang good.
Let me give you an example of how inexpensive these things are and how fast they are. I mean, right now, a 2 terabyte NVMe runs around $180 to $240.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like the fact of the matter is, like this, it will invite more people into. I don't want to say like a standardized. I guess kind of a standardized version of PC gaming. Like I've seen people around the fighting game community think about, well, like a lot of fighting games have been really great on PC for years. What if we could? But the problem with PC fighting games is that you have the problem of just like getting that hardware together. Like, how do you get, if you were going to do PC gaming in a tournament for fighting games?
I imagine you should just get a Hori, what's it called? Fight stick. I mean,
no, I'm talking about like doing fighting games on a PC in a tournament. Like, how do you get 40 rigs? Who's going to supply 40 different rigs? And are they all going to work in the same operation?
The controller for the Steam Deck does not impress me. It looks substandard to me.
The Steam Deck has Bluetooth and a few other.
And that's better. So long as, you know, if people, I mean, for a fighting game, they'd probably say, you know, we'll just get our Bluetooth Horis and just, you know, play via that way.
Mm-hmm. So the possibilities that the Steam Deck puts forth as far as like standardized PC gaming for fighting games is substantial, because it would be much easier to get like 20 Steam Decks together than to get 20 different PCs together for a tournament.
Here's the thing, though. It is still $650, and I could I'd rather buy a new PC for $1,300 than get a Steam Deck for $650.
Oh, sure. That was something that I considered too. Is like, do I want to get this or do I want to get my hands on a new laptop?
But on the other hand, it is a nice new toy.
And ultimately, what I decided is, if I don't like it, I'll sell it and get it and put that money towards a new laptop.
And it only costs you $5 to pre-order.
Probably be able to sell for double what you buy it for, I'm sure.
Nah, don't scalp. But like I said, it is a new toy, so we'll see. I mean, Steam VR never really took off.
Mm-hmm.
And they're actually, from what I remember, they're replacing Steam TV with Steam Deck UI on Steam.
Mm-hmm. I saw that as well. I never really used the big picture thing, so...
Yeah, the big picture, that's right.
Yeah, so hopefully this UI is good.
Anyways, we have two owners two potential owners of a Steam Deck. So... Get back to us in September 2022.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you guys get yours sooner than that, because that's going to be a long-ass wait.
So I'll probably be able to play Udian Rising on it when it comes out next year, so that'll be cool.
So I'm almost certain, and I'm 99% certain here. The current Q3 2022 shipment dates is on further orders that are coming up. Because, like, it started at Q1 2021, or it started at December 2021, which is when me and Scott got in our orders. And then later in the day, it moved to Q1 2022. Then it moved to Q2 2022. And now we're seeing Q3 2022. I'm almost certain, because it says, like, it says estimated online it says estimated order availability. That is meaning that's when newer orders are going to should expect to get it after that point.
Imagine if Microsoft and Sony had prioritized older accounts to pre-ordering the next gen systems. If say, you've been on Xbox Live for 17 years, you get special dispensation.
Did you see the shenanigans that were happening on ordering day with some people? Like, some people were trying to do it, and it was saying, your account is too new. You can't order this.
And no, it was like, well, we mentioned that. I mean, for 48 hours starting on Friday, people with brand new Steam accounts were locked out of ordering.
But it was also like all the way. I had a colleague that has had.
Oh,
Steam
you also had to order something before June 2021.
Yeah. Which is like, You had to order something after June 2021.
I thought it was before June 20.
You have to have made at least one purchase before that. Again, new.
Basically, if you hadn't made an order since June 2021, you blew it.
Well, I ordered Universal Steam. What's it called? My most recent order was Universal Sandbox.
Well, then you, sir, by the grace of Gaben, are allowed to order a Steam Deck.
I pass. I have enough portable systems, and I have so many games to play. It's not even funny.
I haven't been able to touch them.
And paradoxically, I've been going to older games. Like, I just started playing Psychonauts again because I'm getting buzzed. Here's the thing, for those who don't know. Review sites have started releasing videos of the first 5 or 6 hours of Psychonauts 2. So it's been like a minefield for me not to get any spoilers. So to cure my... It's coming out in August, and to satiate my need for Psychonauts, I've been playing the original Psychonauts.
Oh my god, I can talk about it. I got to play the preview for Psychonauts 2, and
a lot of
dear lord,
I didn't.
It's dang dang good.
I know. In Tim I trust, although that was sort of bitten by I'm gonna have to try Brutal Legend again, knowing that it's basically a glorified RTS now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's still a lot of people who like Brutal Legend. Hey, I liked Broken Age, even though it got a lot of mess. I really enjoyed Broken Age.
I did too. I like that game a lot. Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item, which is going to sort of break TJ's heart. Go ahead, TJ.
PES is dead, replaced by the F2P football platform eFootball from PC Gamer. Konami has announced that Pro Evolution Soccer is no more, and that its long-running football series has a new name and focus. The venerable Japanese football developers' football games began under the names of Winning 11, International Superstar Soccer Abroad, and then from 2001 was named Pro Evolution Soccer, which for a long time had, and particularly in the 2000s, was simply a much better game than FIFA. Konami's been using the eFootball branding alongside PES for a while, but now it's just going to be eFootball. The annual release cycle has been bent too. Instead, eFootball will be a free-to-play football platform fueled by DLC launching this autumn on PC. It's been built on Unreal Engine and features cross-play with console and mobile players. Mobile players, in case you're wondering, will only be able to cross-play with a controller. Konami released the roadmap of its plans for the game's post-launch support. At launch, however, eFootball looks like it will be a little sparse. The roadmap shows there will be 9 clubs to play in exhibition matches, while other modes will be arriving later, presumably as paid-for DLC. There's also what appears to be a battle pass called a match pass, but no mention of serious features like My Club, PES's FIFA Ultimate Team, or the career mode yet. You will, however, be able to customize and share teams as PES has always allowed. Here's what I'm not mad about this.
Well, Pro Evolution Soccer has really declined in recent years. I know a lot of people have complained about it. As much as people complain about FIFA, PES has been worse.
Yeah, and I mean, like, so they basically scrapped everything and rebuilt the game from the ground up.
By the way, what is mentioned in this was a long article, but they also mentioned that they were including a new physics model, new stuff that's basically the pro motion of FIFA. So they've been doing a lot of stuff from the ground up in terms of gameplay.
Yes. They rebuilt the game pretty much entirely from scrap. And but like getting into that whole free-to-play model thing.
Sounds an awful lot like
Madden, FIFA, and NBA 2K and games like that. Probably should have been turned into games as a service a long time ago, because all they've done for like the past 4 or 5 years, and some would argue even longer, is rehash the same mechanics and make things worse.
Have you seen how much drubbing Madden NFL 22 has been getting?
And it deserves it for being such a shitty game.
I mean, it hasn't been released yet, and it's already getting drubbed.
Oh, that's the new one. Okay, yeah, the last one was just...
The last one got absolutely torpedoed by fans, even though it sold million and they made billions of dollars on the stupid Madden Ultimate Team.
Yes. But there are a lot of people out there that just, like, think, why don't you, like, take a good Madden game and then just build upon that forevermore as a games as a service thing?
That's what they do with... Here's the thing. That's what they do with PC sports games for a long time. It was only consoles that had to do yearly updates because guess what? There was no way to get updated rosters except to release the game year after year after year. You know, mm-hmm. With, say, Front Page Sports Football, there was the – you could either get Front Page Football or 95 or the 95 expansion to the original game, and they would just keep on iterating on that original game as expansions. Now – No, just buy the entire game over and over and over again instead of just getting an expansion pack.
Yeah. So I'm not down on this. I think it's a good idea. It will depend upon how good the execution is and how well they keep up with it. But I think that updating a game with like creating a solid foundation, like where the gameplay is really good, and then adding teams and then continually adding teams, continually adding events and continually adding content year after year with just like tweaks and little bits here to spice things up now and then. I think that's kind of what the sports game, I think that's what the sports gaming scene needs.
But here's the thing about that. What about, I'm going to tell you something. I stopped playing MLB The Show completely. Mm-hmm. Because the road to the show is just extremely bland, and I reach a Hall of Fame, and guess what? There's nothing else for me to do. If I stretch to a new character, it's going to be the same 94 rating, and I don't want that. I want to experience all new stories, and there was no story in Road to the Show. Absolutely none. And it makes me wonder if I should just pick up some cheap PS4 and buy MLB The Show 19. That's how bad MLB The Show is to me. Because this entire Ultimate Team stuff has infected every game. Even Out of the Park Baseball, even though it hasn't, you know, there's just so much you can do with a text game that's going to draw people away from what it offers, you know. It's a disease that's infecting the sports games right now.
Mm-hmm.
Someone is going to have to make a single player experience only sports game, period. I mean, Super Mega Baseball tried.
Sports Story. From the people who made Golf Story.
Golf Story, yeah, that's a good game, I think. I haven't played that, but it looked like fun.
Actually, the PGA game that was released first as 2K, and I think EA bought the developers, was a really good single-player experience with a career mode.
One of my colleagues at our site who generally reviews the sports games for us, like every time he's talked about the story mode in Madden or NBA or F1, it seems like the story mode that Electronic Arts does is pretty much always the same. You start out as a rookie and you could go into a game and score like 100 points on some other high school team, and then you go back to the locker room and your coach is like, "You sucked ass out there. You're terrible. Take the bench."
Or the college mode in which you're enforced to swap with another quarterback, and it's like you could score 5 touchdowns, 600 yards. Say, "Yeah, okay, it's his turn now." And real college football is, yeah, you're staying there until you actually suck.
Uh-huh.
Here's the thing that I don't like is that it used to be you could play a lot of other positions than quarterback. I mean, I think this Madden now is actually going to have running backs, wide receivers, and one defensive position. I forgot which one. But in the old Madden career mode, you could play any position except for except for offensive linemen. But hell, I would have done that too. I mean, you know, they're only doing the highlights of the game. Can you imagine if you were a field goal kicker? And for the field goal kicker, they made it extremely hard to kick field goals, so that it's like every time you kick a field goal, it's like a test of your abilities.
Yeah. You're the most beloved or least liked person in the city.
Wide right. No! It's going to be interesting. I was going to say earlier that it sort of reminded me of Rainbow Six Siege, using that type of service, in which you have the base game and then you get operators, and instead of operators you get teams and gameplay modes.
So getting back to this though, like I do think that as far as like PvP and competitive sporting games goes, eFootball is going to be kind of like an interesting experiment. And I think, and my hope is that it's a good enough foundation.
Oh God, I just realized. Maybe Hold I on. Should have revised what it was like. Instead of Rainbow Six Siege, I just said it was more like Killer Instinct. And that eFootball was going to be like a fighting game in which you got content in the same way a fighting game might get it.
See, and that would make sense because Killer Instinct was free to play, and then you could buy into like the seasons and stuff.
Or you can buy individual fighters, and they allowed you to test out the fighters before you actually bought them.
For sure. And like, there's no reason you couldn't do that with eFootball. Like, have clubs in there that are like, this club is featured. These two or three clubs are featured this week, and you can play them for free. You can also, but if you like them, you can also buy them to play permanently. And like, my hope is that the foundation and gameplay on this are good enough that it works well enough to put pressure on Electronic Arts to consider it when it comes to FIFA and Madden. That it puts pressure on 2K to consider it when it comes to NBA 2K. Because those games, all of those franchises are just freaking dismal these days.
But you were playing Pro Evolution Soccer in the 2000s. I remember.
Mm-hmm. I played it the last time that would have been 2017. Okay. Is the last time they did one, and I liked that game. But it's been a while, and I did not play eFootball PES 2020, but I also didn't hear very good things about it. So this was a much needed directional shift for them. And I also think that it's going to be an interesting experiment as far as like the future of the PES series, but also, well, I mean, not the PES series, it's eFootball now, but also just like for sporting games as a whole. Like I really do think that this is going to be, this could be like a make or breaker for like a turn on an era of sporting games.
Just people understand that eFootball was around. It was the, online component of PES, and now they're just going with eFootball, period, and dropping the PES from it.
Yes. So, I'm interested to see where this goes. I think it's going to be one that everybody that's a sports fan should be watching this one to see how it turns out.
They need to nail the gameplay and the physics.
Uh-huh.
If it's going to be free to play.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Humankind dev pulls controversial Denuvo DRM from game before launch. This is from Eurogamer. The developer of Humankind has pulled the Denuvo DRM from the game ahead of launch in August. Amplitude Studios' Sega-published Civilization-style strategy game was set to use Denuvo in a bid to prevent it from being cracked by pirates, at least in the short term. Denuvo has always been a controversial digital rights management DRM tool when it comes to PC games. Some have reported a performance impact when it has been used. Most recently, our own Digital Foundry compared the performance of a pirated version of Resident Evil Village, which had stripped out Denuvo and Capcom's additional copyright protection against a released version of PC, I found the DRM stripped version performed far better than the released game. Eventually, Roman D. Wobbert, boss of Amplitude, stepped in with news based on data from our trial during the closed beta. We have decided not to include Denevo in Humankind at launch. That is really strange when DRM is being hampering the game performance. It should only, you know, ensure that the game is not a cracked copy and then just let the game play and run on its own.
It's even stranger when it's going to be on Steam, because Steam is DRM itself.
Yeah.
It's also going to be on the Epic Store as well, but for those who don't know, Amplitude Studios basically made all the Endless games. They made Endless Space, as in Legend, Dungeon of the Endless, and they're coming with Endless Dungeon soon, and that's going to be multi-platform, too. So this is something new for them, but a lot of people love the Endless games. So it's going to be very... And I'm interested because it's a Civ game, but it's not a Civ game. It's taking a whole new tack on the Civ game. Where Civs, in Civilization, you take control of a civilization, you know, a specific civilization. Like, you're the Greeks, you're the Americans, you're the French. In this, you're an unnamed civilization, and you're going to be emulating certain civilizations from the past. And you'll have a choice. And it's going with a more holistic version of the civilization thing, in which it's going for the story rather than, you know, the strict gameplay and watching, you know, watching the number crunching that you have in Civilization. Like, okay, do I want to keep this a forest, or do I want to plow it under and build a farm? What workers do I have, and how can I exploit that the best? Humankind is going for a softer approach. It's going for a more, you know, do you want your civilization to go in this direction, or do you want it to go in that direction?
Right.
I mean, Scott, you've been following it. What are your impressions so far?
I thought it was really interesting. You change out the leader, you know, you evolve your leader as well as your civilization. So that's a new dynamic I like.
How about you, TJ? What do you think?
Yeah, like, Humankind is a pretty, I like what Amplitude is doing with that game. I really do think it's, as much as it like borrows from what Civilization has done, it also goes off on its own paths and does some very interesting different things. And I think that like for that game to succeed and for that game to do well, you really don't wanna, it's already gonna be compared to Civilization. You don't wanna saddle it down and give it a limp by saddling it with like all the politics and annoyances associated with Denuvo and the conversations and controversy around it. This game needs to be unfettered. It needs to be, it needs to be basically accessible and not frustrating to get into.
Do you remember the Star Force DRM?
Right? And it's like, I really like Humankind. I've liked a lot of Amplitude's games.
Have you played the Endless games?
I've played the holy heck out of Endless Legend. I love that game. Playing as the dragon people in that game is so fun. Because your job isn't to like actually kill the other civilizations or like take over the world. Your job is to collect knowledge and like befriend other knowledge-seeking species. And I think
that's
it's interesting.
That's more of a 4X game than Humankind is.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. Like Amplitude is really, really good at giving you like sub objectives based on what kind of faction you're playing as. And I think that I've really always enjoyed that about their games, and it comes across in Humankind as well.
Let's hope. I mean, like I said, I'm intrigued by Humankind. I'd like to see a new Civilization game out there and see what kind of tack they make.
Do you know like the gameplay loop of Humankind?
Yeah, I have an idea of what it is.
Yeah, so it, like, I really enjoy the idea that you start as one civilization, but, like, as you reach...
You have a choice of what kind of civilization you want to be. Do you want to be the Romans, or do you want to be the Greek? That sort of thing, you know. This...
But I like the idea that as you pass through an age, yeah, you have the chance to, like, choose a different civilization, yeah, with different specializations.
Yeah. But here's the thing, is that you're creating your own civilization. I mean, in civilization, you're the Americans, you'll always be the Americans. That'll be your label. In humankind, you're your civilization, whatever it is. It's your you created the civilization. It can be named whatever you want. And whatever it is, it's from which way you're going to move it. And a lot of it isn't just, you know, I'm going to place a city here, I'm going to place a city here, I'm going to place a city here. A lot of it is, well, do we want to be more fascistic, or do we want more of a open economy, or that sort of thing?
Or it's like you start out as like a market trading nation, and then you think, well, what can I do? How can I build upon that? So you might, like, if you've been expanding your region to like a coastal area, you might think, well, now I want to take on the role of a seafaring civilization.
And the other thing is that the way you conquer other countries, you can conquer them just by influencing them to thinking the way you think. Which is
like a culture victory.
What? It's not. No, it's not even a culture victory, because in civilization, it's sort of like, yeah, our blue genes took over your brains, didn't they? No, in this one, it's more like, you know what? We're a democratic society with some, you know, things, and other countries start saying, yeah, I think they have the right idea. And it's sort of like you're influencing other countries to think like you.
The power of your cities and there are philosophies and ideas that are considered to have better, more positive effects than others. And basically you combine those benevolent philosophies with the power and influence of your cities, and it will actually exert like influence on neighboring civilizations.
But the entire point is that this game takes the entire civilization concept and makes it a more holistic thing. It makes it civilization, you know, Firaxis civilization is a lot of number crunching.
I actually got to talk with the directors of this game one time, and I think one of the funnest questions and answers that I got out of them was I asked them, like, how do you approach building a game like this, knowing that there's a juggernaut like civilization that everybody often associates with this genre? And their answer to me was, when Firaxis builds a civilization game, everybody has an idea of what a civilization game should be and the basic elements that should be there. We don't have those restraints. We can choose to do whatever the hell we want. And if we think a civilization thing is a good idea, we might use it, but we don't have to. We can do our own game. Yeah. And I think that's an interesting thing, because it's true. If a civilization game doesn't have A or B or C or D, then people will get mad.
Yeah, I've seen some 4X games that go their own way, their own direction. I know there's some there was a fantasy one based where you had different leaders and different, like, you'd collect magic spells and whatever. So there was a lot of different. Yeah.
Yeah, Master of Magic is one of my favorite games. Although that game I would describe as Civilization meets Magic the Gathering.
Right.
And it's not even subtle about being like Magic the Gathering either. It is so unsubtle about it. It does the same colors, the same philosophies for each color. It's just, it was like they said, we like Civilization, but we also like Magic Gathering. Let's combine the two.
Yeah.
And it inspired Age of, what was it called again? Age of Wonders. And I didn't like Age of Wonders as much. I want there to be a straight up remake of Master of Magic, because I don't want to have to play it in DOSBox all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Have you played Master of Magic?
I haven't played that one.
You haven't?
I have not.
It is a treat. It is a real treat. And here's the thing. The strategy guide outsold the game and made people want to buy the game.
Huh, that's funny.
Go find the Prima strategy guide and read it and not find yourself saying, hot damn, I want to play this game.
That's kind of, I think my golden standard for how cool a guide can, or actually, I guess it wasn't a guide. This was actually packaged with the game, but like back in the day when like game manuals were literally like books, I think my favorite of those was Warcraft 2.
But I'm just saying, and it was based on the 1.3 model. So not only was this a strategy guide, it was actually a strategy guide for a patch version of a game.
I miss good paperback strategy guides.
Yeah, this was the this was a Prima guide. And let me tell you something. The Prima strategy guide for Master of Magic was thick. It was like 2 inches thick. It was a huge manual. And nice. It was as fun to read as anything else. And it made you want to buy the game. Which it did with me. By that time, the game was like a year and a half old. So, because I was thumbing through it in a computer game store, and just the stuff captured me, and then I said, fuck it, I'll buy it, and then I bought the manual, and then I bought the game. Yeah, Scott? Mm-hmm. Mute your
voice.
Your mic is doing like an auto gain thing where it's trying to pick up voice, but it's like it just keeps gaining.
I have no idea.
Anyway,
I don't hear anything.
We hear it. Trust us.
Well, it was just like a thing where like the mic opens and then it just keeps increasing in volume because it's looking for something.
It's white.
Okay,
noise.
I'm not sure what to do.
Mute yourself for now, and then just turn it on when it's your turn to speak or when you want to speak.
Okay.
Okay, so anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. And the next item I just did because it's a bunch of games and I want to talk about them. Xbox Game Pass is about to have an unbelievably good month. And this comes to us from VG2047. Xbox Game Pass is featuring a strong class of games during the AAA list summer months, including Chris Tales, July 20th. This is being recorded on the 21st. Atomicrops and Last Stop are coming on the 22nd. Raji and Ancient Epic on the 22nd. Blinks the Time Sweeper on July 26th. Crimson Skies High Road to Revenge on the 26th. Both of those are original Xbox games, by the way. Microsoft Flight Simulator, the Xbox version, on the 27th. Lethal League Blaze on the 29th. Omno on the 29th. The Ascent on the 29th. Project Wingman is also on the 29th. It's PC only. Hades, 12 Minutes, and Psychonauts are in August. So, TJ, let's talk about some of these games. Scott, I already mentioned this earlier. Chris Tales is a JRPG. You know, it sort of reminds... It looks like something from Cartoon Network.
It does.
I have to look at it again. I think I have it on my wish list.
Yeah.
Let's see. But, yeah, I can see the cartoony look. Yeah, and it has, like, the menu is very exaggerated and you know, kind of... big. Yeah, it has a turn-based or turn ticker time thing where you can see the turn order. I mean, it looks good. But, you know, I haven't played it and don't know when I'll be getting it right now. But, yeah, it looks good.
So the one that intrigues me, well, there's a lot of them intrigues me, but the one that intrigues me is The Ascent. And it worries me a little bit because I think it's being released around the same time. No, it's not. It's being released a month before Diablo II Resurrected. And basically, for those who don't know, The Ascent is sci-fi Diablo.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes, that's a.
Of those games, aside from we all know what you think of Hades.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to 12 Minutes. Ever since I saw the trailer, I've been keeping an eye on this one. I want to try it out.
Yeah, it's got a really interesting cast, and I didn't realize – I don't think I ever realized that Annapurna Interactive has such a massive access to –
Well, here's the thing. Annapurna is a new film studio.
Mm-hmm.
So they have access to the actors, and they probably ask, hey, guys, you want to do some voiceover work for our game? We'll pay you the same as we do for a movie.
Yeah, because this game has like – it has Willem Dafoe and Daisy Ridley right out of the gate. Like, It has some really great actors in it.
has James McAvoy.
Crimson Skies is an interesting one on this list.
I hope it has current Xbox Live on it, because that's the only reason why anybody played Crimson Skies.
Yes. Psychonauts 2 is on there. That's going to be a banger. Yeah, there's a lot of good ones on there.
Raji is an interesting-looking game. It's a 2D platformer, combat platformer, with a set in India. And Last Stop also looks really interesting.
I think, what was it?
By the way, it also is Annapurna Interactive. And for those who are wondering, Annapurna Interactive was also responsible for What Remains of Edith Finch.
I had a brain fart there for a second, but the Ascent has looked fun to me because, it looks like Diablo, but I think the way in which the action plays out also makes me think of Helldivers, which I really enjoyed the hell out of Helldivers.
Yeah. But I was a backer of Psychonauts 2, so when you play it, look for me in the Hall of Brains.
Yay!
It'll be green. I wanted my brain to be green. But, what about, sorry. I have a brain fart. I've been playing a lot of, Flight Simulator on the PC. So it might be nice to get it off my my SSD hard drive and just play it on the Xbox Series X. Have you seen Omno?
I have not seen Omno.
It's a pretty interesting looking game. It's also going to be on Steam and PS4 and Switch. And it's an open world game. It's sort of like one step above Minecraft in terms of type of graphics. It's not quite blocky, but it's there. And there's a lot of exploration. It just looks very, very interesting.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to dig into it pretty much at all. But I need to look at this one.
So, there's some gets here that I was surprised Microsoft's able to do, like Hades, putting that on Game Pass. And I also found out Back 4 Blood is going to be on Game Pass day one.
Oh, I remember seeing Omno. I like the look of this game. Looks very fun. It looks very relaxing.
Yeah. But Back 4 Blood is going to be on Game Pass day one.
Yes.
I was shocked to learn that. I mean, Microsoft is really swinging for the stars here in some of the games, and not just first-party games.
Yes. Dead by Daylight. Did you see the PC trailer that they came out with a couple days ago?
No.
They have some very, very good-looking features that I hope they eventually work out for PS5 and Xbox Series X, at least. They won't be able to do a few of them, but they're doing ultra-wide screen support. They're doing NVIDIA DLSS. They're doing 4K. And, of course, they're doing cross-play between all platforms. So, yeah, I'm really excited to play Dead. Little by little, they've won me over to actually believing that this will be fun. I was probably like the little least. I was super nervous about when I heard that Turtle Rock was coming back with another. When I heard there was a PvP element to this game, I was like, ooh.
But they had a PvP element in Left 4 Dead too, you know.
I know, but like.
What did their last game just crush you that much?
Evolve. I really had high hopes for that game, and it was upsetting.
And also Project Wingman. For those who don't know, it's basically the PC version of Ace Combat.
Nice.
Yeah, it's been around since last year, December 2020.
This. The announcement of them finally adding Microsoft Flight Simulator to Game Pass also coincides with the fact that they haven't fully confirmed, but they've basically confirmed that helicopters will eventually be coming to the game.
Oh, yeah. And also, they also announced the Top Gun Maverick that will use Microsoft Flight Simulator as a base.
Nice. That's really cool. I like the idea of helicopters and Microsoft Flight Simulator because, like, it will make it so much easier to, like, to hover near and look at landmarks. With an airplane, you kind of, like, either have to pass by or crash into it. And it's kind of hard to, like...
Well, that's why I always use the biplane.
Yeah.
On the other hand, just try piloting a helicopter in Antarctica and find out what happens.
Sure.
But I will say this, you know, I'm looking forward to playing Hades and getting achievements for it.
For sure. That'll be a really fun one.
And I never really finished the PC version, so I'm just going to finish it on Xbox/Windows. Anyways, I'm hoping that Blinks gets enough praise that they decide to make a remake or a sequel or a reboot or something.
Blinks is one of those characters that kind of everybody wanted it to be like a mascot type character, isn't it?
Yeah, Microsoft wanted them to, wanted him to be the mascot, but then ended up being Master Chief. So, yeah. Anyways. Scott?
Yes.
Have you played Hades yet?
Oh, yeah. I played it. I thought I talked about it on here.
By the way, yeah. that hum is gone, so you can...
Oh, that's good. Excellent. yeah, I've played Hades. I've gotten most of the little artifacts from giving the little Nectar of the God thing, and I really enjoy that there's so much dialogue in the game. Every time you come back, there's just something new there, and that you always get a little bit more powerful each time. I've gotten to the Elysium Fields, and I didn't make it to the Minotaur, but I got pretty far.
Are you going to play Omno when it comes out?
Oh, yeah, I'll play it on the Steam Deck, yeah.
Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
We will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Be cool. Play games, y'all.